Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome in to another episode of Turn the Corner, a Detroit Tigers podcast. I'm Kieran Steckley. With me, as always, is a man who wears shades but doesn't throw shade. He is Cody Stavenhagen. How you doing?
Doing good, Kieran. Some of my commenters would disagree. Some people thinking I throw too much shade. Some people thinking I don't throw enough shade. Some people think I created a fake account to respond to the comments. I didn't. I would just respond myself. Yeah, sometimes it's hard, man. Sometimes it's hard. Like Drake said, my comment section killing me.
Is this Twitter comments or the comments on The Athletic?
On The Athletic, which I don't always read, but sometimes I do. The reason I don't always read is what I'm talking about right now. So, but hey, the people got takes because it's spring training. There's some interest, all right? Probably the most interest there's been around this team in a long time. So I am thankful for that. Thankful for the guys who are reading. If you got takes, you know what? That's cool. At least the people are engaged right now.
Exactly. And there's no better time to be engaged in the beginning of spring training on what is a more promising season potentially than in quite a while. Which, speaking of, so you are down there in Lakeland as promised. And so we had an actual pitchers and catchers report date and a lot of volunteers coming in beforehand. By the time this podcast publishes, it will be the first official full squad workout. So you've been in Lakeland about a week now. What's kind of the vibes actually boots on the ground as opposed to us having to talk about it, the comments and on The Athletic and on Twitter? You've been around the guys, you've heard from AJ and Scott and all that stuff. What's kind of the vibe right now?
Vibe, that's a spring training word if I've ever heard one. It's good. I think the thing that stands out, everyone's already here, man. I've never seen, look, spring training these days, everyone shows up early. The report dates are kind of fictional, but I've never seen this many position players just already here, raring and ready to go. Seems like all of these pitchers are like already built up, ready to go. Kind of reminds us that spring training is probably too long for the modern athlete. Because some of these guys look like they could jump in a game right now. As much as we're going to talk about, oh, the Tigers are young, they're fun, they're energetic, like that's true. But so far, the attitude's like, it's pretty businesslike. Like these dudes are itching to get to work. So I think that's what has stood out to me the most.
Well, businesslike, part of that is stating your business plan, your business goals out in the open. At least, I'm sure there's been more, at least Scooble and Torque have been on the record leading up and in Lakeland of saying like, look, we're going after the division, you know, basically getting the dance and see what happens. I like that. Like, what is spring training for, Cody? Spring training is for us to take small things and blow them out of proportion and just realize that we're doing it and we do this every year and I'm going to do it right now. Like, I like the fact that these guys decided like, hey, well, what am I doing just hanging out, you know, wherever? Why don't I just go to Lakeland. Let's get going. I can't wait. You know, I think that's a good overall sign of team health. I do. Does it translate to a lot of wins? Probably not. Is it, you know, better than the alternative of everyone just showing up right at 9 a.m. or whatever the day of? Yeah, probably, you know, but I'm excited about it. It's cool to hear. And it's also cool to hear players that, especially Scooble, obviously more so than Torque, although Torque's got, you know, he's got some skins on the wall in his short career, kind of being frank about what they think they can achieve and what they want to achieve in a way that seemed a little bit more serious, or as you said, businesslike, than years past. Because we've heard him say, like, oh yeah, we'd like to win the division, we'd like to, and now it's like,
yeah, to be fair, I heard Matthew Boyd give a very convincing case for the team every single spring in the last like 3 or 4 years. So, you know.
But again, that's a Boyd thing. Like, I guarantee you, Torque wouldn't have been comfortable enough to say this last year.
This, you know, is just true. In general. This is true.
And Scooble, as much as we believe in him, and he's like the quintessential dark horse for the Cy Young, the way he finished last year certainly, I'm sure, made him feel like he could be a voice to that, you know what I mean? And like, without a Boyd and without Eduardo, someone's got to be the voice of the staff, right? And he certainly has the ability and the kind of intense personality to do so. So like, those are all kind of fun things. I did actually have,
well,
go ahead.
If we're talking about the messaging, I think we got to talk about what the manager and the president of baseball ops has said, because it is a little bit different. And I don't have a problem with it, because this is AJ Hinch and Scott Harris. Like, they're smart, level-headed guys. They're kind of reasoning with the fan base here. I think a couple people have taken it a bit out of context. Neither of them said, oh, we're going to be bad or anything like that. AJ said we're unafraid to talk about winning. But he said what he said a lot of last year. Like, we haven't earned the right to talk about division crowns or anything like that yet. We have to go do it. Scott Harris, look, this guy's excited for the young progress in his organization, but he's tried to be really clear and saying, hey, we know we are a young team. We know we have young hitters. The reality is some young hitters are going to struggle. He's trying to be transparent with the fans about that, so it's not a surprise. Now, I understand if you're a fan out there and you hear that, you think, oh, I'm supposed to get fired up knowing, you know, these guys are all going to go through rough patches. So the messaging, you know, they're, especially after the success the Lions had, there are people who are going to want everyone to be Dan Campbell and wear a hat that says grit on it and be fired up all the time. People who run the Tigers, I think, are pretty good at their jobs. They're different personalities. And so their messaging has been, it's just been more level-headed. So I don't know. As a fan, like, what do you think about that, Kieran?
So when I see the quotes from AJ, the first thing that kind of popped in my head was, look at his resume. He knows what a division championship team, yes, looks like. Like, going in, like, it's that or bust or higher. He knows what a World what a pennant winning team looks like. He knows what a World Series winning team looks like. So he's not naive to the steps it takes to get there, what the talent level is, in order to sort of think like this is, it's this or that. You know, I appreciated where he was coming from. And Scott was, I like the word there that you use, transparent, because,
you know what I like about, you know what I like about this, and specifically what Scott said? We're treating the fans as intelligent. We're not treating them as idiots and trying to sell something that's not all the way there. Like, we're being real and say, hey, you guys are knowledgeable baseball people. Here's kind of the state of our team. Here's what to expect. We're not going to sell you a load of goods that's not entirely true. Because there's some teams that do that. There's probably been Tigers leadership in the past that has done that.
Yeah, and look, it, as often whenever Scott or AJ, but I think especially Scott, it stands out to me more in his, you know, whatever, going into his second year at the helm, is that he says things, and they're not like all that deep, but you never really thought of it that way, and you're like, oh wow, yeah, duh, like, one of the things that I thought was interesting about the offseason, he kind of confirmed it, is I would say over the past couple years, maybe not from an individual player perspective, but an organization and its use of resources perspective, pitching has been a strong suit, right? I think we could say like the use of pitching for the Tigers has been a strong suit these past couple years. So that would be their strength, and they went and made their strength stronger, which I think is an underrated sort of year-to-year team-building philosophy. Everyone kind of wants to say, like, all right, well, this is what we do really well. So let's bring this up here. Sometimes you have to kind of let this come naturally, and you can still strengthen this side. And I think that was basically what Scott Harris said. It's like, yeah, we know we're going to have to be a well-run pitching team because of, like you said, young hitters and the struggles they might go through. We're going to have close games, and we're going to have to be able to win low-scoring games. How do you do that? Pitching and defense, although it's baseball, so a lot of times hitting comes at the expense of defense. But you see what I'm saying. Like, that was a very it confirmed that it was a very purposeful offseason, and I appreciated him being frank and honest about that. And it didn't upset me to hear him kind of say these things. It actually kind of made me a little bit more encouraged, because it seems a little bit more purposeful than some teams of the past. If you look at kind of the way, even since we've been doing this podcast, Cody, if you look at some of the ways like the teams were constructed, as it's moving forward right now, it feels a lot more purposeful and definitely, I think, a result of Scott Harris's imprint on this organization.
I think purposeful is a good word for almost everything Scott Harris has done since taking over as the president of baseball ops. I think the Tigers would like to be competitive this year. I do think they see a world in which they can win this division. I also think the reality is this is all part of a longer term plan. Scott can't ever say this out loud, but I've always felt this guy's not necessarily in a hurry. Think of it. He's got a business economics background. Bay Area guy. What do venture capitalists do? They come up with startups, or they buy out companies, and usually you have kind of like a 5-year plan. And you're not just trying to bleed money in year two. You want to be working toward profitability. But the reality is you're going to lose a little money, and you hope in year five, suddenly you're making it big. And that's not a direct comparison to what's going on with the Tigers, but I think it's somewhat applicable. Like, this is year two of a longer term plan. There's been a lot of progress. This team can be competitive. But obviously, if they were all in on trying to win the World Series, they probably would sign a DH and might have spent even more on pitching and might be doing something different at third base. In year two of this plan, they're not all the way there. And in its own way, Scott is being kind of upfront about that, which maybe is if some fans may not like it, but I think I at least appreciate that he's being real about what's going on and on some level wants the people to understand that.
This team and how the results play out this year will be a fascinating case study, I think, for baseball gurus in general, because it's this, you know, rebuild that we term it started several years ago with obviously a different manager, and then you bring in a powerful manager, and then you replace the president of baseball ops, and it's like, where's the clock start? You know what I mean? Like, it is.
Well, yeah, it's a rebuild that was rebooted, and I did use the term 5-year plans. Scott said he doesn't believe in 5 or 3-year plans or whatever, which is smart because baseball is a very fluid game. So that was more like an analogy than a, you know.
Yeah, and to me, I was thinking, especially after Scott's comments about, you know, the young hitters and the struggles they'll go through and the pitching additions they made and processes behind those, I was thinking, you know, it's kind of funny, right? Like, we think it was a rebooted rebuild, which it is. But at the same time, we kind of landed about, like, not exactly. And I know this is completely an oversimplification, but we kind of landed about where it would have been reasonably expected in terms of team strength and organization health in certain areas of the team. What I mean by that is this was a pitcher-heavy rebuild. I think a lot of that was circumstantial, but that's how it played out. And then you kind of bring the hitters along afterward, and you have guys like, you know, Scooble wasn't, you know, you didn't draft him at the time banking on him to be, you know, heading to this rebuild, but that's how it turned out. You're like, he's obviously ahead of some of these younger players they're going to be relying on. So at the end of the day, the oft-criticized Alavila pitching heavy rebuild kind of ended up exactly where it was kind of supposed to, with a lot of different intricacies here and there and different people, different voices and all that stuff. I just kind of found it a little amusing.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it. Like, obviously, it's not been linear. I think the hitters, in a lot of ways, have jumped ahead of the pitchers. Like, the most exciting things about this team are Torkelson and Green and Carpenter. Your pitching rebuild, I mean, the best one of them is Skubal. We don't know what we're getting out of Mize. The days of Matt Manning being like a future ace, you're kind of hoping he can develop into a mid-rotation starter. Alex Fido's in the bullpen. So the whole thing was kind of flipped on its head, but you're right in that you feel better about the pitching and you're waiting on more of the hitting to develop and come. So I don't know. We can talk about the big picture of this organization for days. Let's dive into some nitty-gritty of spring training.
Well, one more kind of big-ish picture thing, but specific to this year, I wanted to get out of here because we're getting a considerable amount, Cody, of Parker Meadows hype. Now, I've always loved his profile. I love, you know, the great athlete in the outfield and around the bases and, you know, oh man, if the bat could ever get going. And to his credit, he got it going. He projects to be an opening day starter in Major League Baseball. Awesome. And we rave about the defense. I keep telling myself, is it possible? Like, is this a Gold Glove finalist here that we're like, you know, about to watch? And to me, that seems in the realm of possibility. But he is kind of, in my opinion, like, make a player the 2024 Detroit Tigers. It's Parker Meadows. It took a while to get here. You're excited as hell about it. On the field, you're pretty confident, like the ball field. And in the batter's box, you're still kind of waiting and hoping that it's going to work out. You know, I hope that analogy kind of tracks a little bit. Because the Parker Meadows thing is exciting, but I'd be lying to tell you, Cody, if it's not kind of scary. Because we're talking ourselves into a lot, just like, again, guilty as charged of doing it. But we're talking ourselves into a lot for him, kind of at the same rate that we are the success that this team can have in 2024. I think they align well.
Yeah, I don't think some of the question marks around Meadows are lost on the Tigers' decision makers. You see just this huge upside and ceiling that he has. Parker's one of my favorite guys in this clubhouse to cover. Great personality. Obviously, a ton of fun to watch. I think I've probably said it before. Sometimes we're probably treating him as too much of a sure thing. The defense is really good. But do you know how hard it is to be actually a plus center fielder at the major league level? I think the best defender I've still seen is Derek Hill. Derek Hill, in his short time in the major leagues, I think was negative defensive runs saved. And the reason, because in center field, you were compared to every other center fielder in the league. Every team thinks they have a tremendous center fielder. So to actually be a Gold Glove center fielder, you have to be the best of the best. Every team's best athlete is in center field. Okay, so you got to trump all these other guys. Hard to do. You could be negative defensive run saved and still be a heck of a defender in center field. So it's that's a lot to wrap your mind around. At the plate, look, the guy's got some raw power. He's obviously made a ton of progress as a hitter. But we talk a lot about prospect lists. Fangraphs just put out theirs. I think their scouting reports are probably the best of the industry. And, you know, it's pretty real. Says he's a little too long and vulnerable against up-and-away fastballs to project sustained offensive performance at this level. Talks about some of his other weaknesses, righty changeups, struggles with soft away. Either you're getting him out or limiting his raw power. Lacks the plus offensive attribute of an impact everyday player. He's a competent and dangerous enough left-handed hitter to project as a complementary regular, the lefty half of a center field platoon. That's more pessimistic than probably what the average Tigers fan thinks Parker Meadows as. And I think there's upside for him to be better than that. But this scouting report, kind of a raw and realistic look at, you know, probably the most likely scenario for Parker Meadows' career. And he's really young. So what if he struggles out of the gate this year, and how does that impact the rest of the team? Could actually have a ton of ripple effects. Or let's just say he gets hurt. So he pulls a hammy because he's a center fielder. Who plays center field? What are we doing there? It's one of the most important questions surrounding this roster right now.
Yeah, and, you know, you're not either one of the guys that you project to be in the corner. You're not putting them, well, outside of Riley, obviously, because that's the natural inclination. But are you, that's another interesting, like, follow-up question is, like, over under innings at center for Riley. And that will probably be directly related to the health and bat performance of a Parker Meadows, because it's one of those things that we at this time last year, we were talking about, man, if him being Parker, if he could get it going, like, that solves a lot of issues. And to the extent that that could have happened last year, it did. Now it's a whole nother animal, and the opposite is true. If he doesn't get it going offensively, then that's one problem that causes about four more.
Yeah. And I think AJ Hinch has already said this, talking about the construction of the roster. I have to be prepared for every scenario. So the Tigers are thinking about all of this, and I don't think they know what the over-under on Riley in center field is. They have a tough decision to make there. I think in an ideal world, you post him up in the outfield corners, and you say, that's it, he's done in center. But you kind of can't do that, because you kind of need a little insurance for Parker Meadows. And even then they're debating, okay, do we just stick Riley in right field and let him be great there? But then you have to move Carpenter to left field where he's not as good, but do you shift them both around? Is that good for your young player? If you don't want Riley in center and something happens with Meadows, you're probably looking at like Matt Vierling, which then messes up your plan at third base, which then impacts the back end of the roster. As I made the case last week, I think you got to take Justin Henry Malloy. I still kind of feel that way. But early vibes, Jahan's got an uphill battle. I think for this scenario we just outlined, Tigers are going to lean toward another player who can play the infield, probably a right-handed bat. So we're talking Ryan Kreidler, the dark horse, Edis Leonard, and new signing Keston Hira. Among the candidates, there are more, Andre Lipschitz, Wenzel Perez, probably a couple guys I'm not even thinking of right now. But I think that's probably the biggest roster battle, and Akil Badu too. So you have Jahan and Badu. Badu hits left-handed. Like, you can see a role for him, but Malloy, I think, is the most intriguing offensively. The Fangraphs scouting report, kind of negative on him. Thinks his plate discipline won't translate as well because pitchers are going to attack him in the zone. Thinks he'll whiff in the zone. That was enlightening to read. In terms of getting anyone at bats, probably what you need is a right-handed infielder. So those are some questions we're going to be wrestling with for the next few weeks here.
So you don't think Jahan will be playing backup center field, right? Half platoon. No.
And that was news that came out this week. He's not playing third base. If he could play third base, I think he'd be on the roster. The reality is, this guy was so rough at third base that Tigers have kind of pulled the plug on it. So he can only play corner outfield. And that does not help his roster case.
One of the few guys that Scott and AJ are like, just do the one thing.
Yeah. No, that's, unfortunately, that's pretty telling.
And, you know, like, I'm taking these quotes with, like, speaking of Jahan, I'm taking these quotes with a grain of salt because, you know, as frank and honest as Scott Harris and AJ can be, like, they still have to. You know, they can't be negative toward their guys, right? So, like, they're talking about some of the athletic traits of Jahan, and Scott Harris was just, like, one sentence away from using the term sneaky athletic. And I was like, well, you know, you guys are going to be surprised with, like, foot speed and, you know, this, that, the other thing. And I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know if this announcement would be made if...
I got to find that direct quote because it's actually pretty funny.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And look, like, I hope Jahan's taking it in stride. I read somewhere that he felt...
Dude's such a fun personality, man. I love him.
Well,
I hope he can hit.
Something of note is that now he's year two in an organization where he actually has some sort of footing and relationships with staff, players, etc. Because he was talking about how, you know, it wasn't that fun last year because it was kind of like first day at a new school, more or less. I'm not quoting him here. So yeah. Hopefully he's more comfortable that way. Maybe that'll lead to some better results, more desirable results.
Okay. Here's the Harris quote on Jahan. I think he has a little bit more athleticism and foot speed and arm strength than we traditionally give him credit for. He's a sneaky
athlete. look, he can put it all to rest if he can hit. That's really... Yeah, I talk about keeping the main thing. That's really the thing for him. Like, you gotta use that hit tool has to be like kind of a leave no doubt hit tool, and certainly something he's capable of. And I like Badu. I almost kind of eliminate him from my thought process on these discussions, because I was like, he's gonna get plenty of major league time regardless of whether he's in Chicago on March 28th. But like Kreidler, some of these other names that you listed, I'm more intrigued to see Jehan. So I hope it works out for him, and it would be like a, because if it did work out, it'd be a nice little feather in the cap of a first traded for player development story, like in the system up to the bigs of the Scott Harris era. So that'd be really nice. And I think overall it was still a valuable trade, but you'd like it to be a little bit more, especially considering that on the 40 man from the Soto deal, he only got one left. So,
yeah. All right. While we're talking about players who are not good on defense, I just got to read this from Fangraphs on Colt Keith. Eric Long and Hangin from Fangraphs is out here making Keith Law look like,
Tigers PR.
Look like Tigers PR. Here's Fangraphs on Colt Keith. He is stiff and bulky. His actions are well below average. And while he shows you a big arm when he gets to wind up and really let it eat, he struggles to throw from odd platforms. It's feasible a team could live with him playing third base situationally, but it's not ideal. And Colt is a 30 grade defender right now. Ouch.
That's not great. That's not great. And I'll tell you, like, obviously you see it, you know, with your own eyes, but, and I'm not watching like a lot of minor league tape or whatever, but that clip of him and Jace working with Cora and Lombard, was it Lombard or Jones? I can't remember, whichever one, on the turn,
yeah, I'm not sure.
The turn, I think it actually was Jones, on the turn.
If it was infield, it was probably Gary Jones.
Yeah,
so.
It was the turn, the second base. Oh my God, Keith is a massive dude, man. And Jace no shrimp, you know what I mean? But, like, just see a guy that big doing the double play turn. I was like, gosh, this is – that's going to take some getting used to. Traditionally, I'm not used to seeing guys like that, you know?
No, and, again, we watched a very big second baseman in Jonathan Scope for a couple years. Colt Keith looked, starting to look like a tight end, which I admire because he's a physical specimen. But, yeah, he don't look like no second baseman, so –
Well, speaking of looks like, let's do this for a couple of minutes, Cody. What's the deal with these uniforms? Like the good news is that the Tigers will have the City Connect jerseys this year, and I'm sure when they come out, some people will like them, a lot of people will hate them. That's just kind of how it goes.
But a lot of you guys are gonna buy them.
Oh,
you're gonna hate them, and you're still gonna buy them.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a win-win for Nike. Nike kind of taking an L, and Fanatics taking an L right now.
Oh, don't buy any of these jerseys, man. Oof.
So what's like? Are they as bad in person as they seem, or like what? Because a lot of times Twitter can overreact. So I'm wondering, is this a Twitter overreaction?
No, man, they suck. They're really bad. It's embarrassing. Some of the reviews. I mean, everyone in the league is talking about it. All the players hate them. They're rolled out poorly. Like, the pants are supposedly less customizable, so especially people with some thicker builds, they like the pants don't fit. The white jerseys are a little more like off-white. Looks stupid. The lettering on the back is just terrible. It looks like, you know, a knockoff jersey you could find at a flea market. For some reason, they just look cheap from afar. They really do. This one's a not big league. I did feel one. I felt Jake Rogers' jersey. It actually was like a felt higher quality than it looks, if that makes any sense. Like, the fabric didn't feel cheap. It felt like good Nike fabric, but the overall look is just awful. And I'm like, they're really going to roll out this stupid art, small, weirdly spaced lettering in the regular season. Like, that's embarrassing. The patches seem more like screen printed than sewed on. Rob Manfred thinks they're great jerseys, though. I hope they redo it to make a better product. It doesn't sound like they will. They're just going to hope everyone forgets and gets used to it, which may happen. But these jerseys are a big step down. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, my advice to baseball in general would be, like, don't shoot yourself in the foot. And the guy in charge of the sport has done that from time to time, I think it's fair to say. But it's spring training. Everybody's excited. Now we got players complaining about, like, the jerseys, like, in the locker, and, you know, the you contributed to a story that The Athletic did, you know, on the broader sense of this, and explained it really well. Should definitely go, should go read it. I'm with you. I don't think that anything's going to change. These are, you're not going to be able to redo all this overnight, number one. And number two, whoever's job it is to eat that cost is not going to want to eat the cost. And I think they finally did release, like, the, like, player authentic, whatever the term is for, like, the high-end jerseys that you can buy. Mm-hmm. I think a biased one is, like, $379 or something like that. Just,
yeah, don't pay that, guys. Go find an old one.
Do what I do and go to eBay and then just search for jerseys and buy them cheap. That's, I actually did that like five times last week. I got the baseball itch, but I don't have it for Fanatics Nike branded rollouts. So,
thinking about getting a $20 Allen Iverson Georgetown jersey on Amazon.
Do it.
I'm like, how bad is it going to look? It looks great on the internet. How bad is it going to look when it actually shows up on my porch? I don't know. It's only $20 though, so maybe I'll do it.
I got an Austin Jackson and a Pudge for about $35-$40 each.
Ooh, nice.
And my thought process on stuff like this is like, am I going to really like the $40 in 2 weeks or whatever, or am I going to want the jersey? You know,
Also not big on adults wearing jerseys of other grown men, so that's another conversation.
That
more okay with throwback jerseys, so
throwback old. I mean, I live like 2 miles from where Austin Jackson went to high school, so I'm like, he's one of the more underrated Tigers of a generation. Okay, we can talk about this another day. And also nice on the radio. I'm a little disappointed he didn't get more of a go there. But yeah, the City Connects will be very interesting. I went to see when they released those. Talk about, like, a staggered, pun intended, non-uniform schedule to release those. It varies by team and by year. Like, they stagger them, like, throughout. So it may be a thing we, like, wait till May or something. You just never know. Like,
sometimes they come out later in the year, for sure.
So we'll see. But I am curious to see what they do, and definitely looking forward to the reaction.
I hope they're good. I don't know if they will be, but I hope they're good. I think there's an opportunity to make something cool. Some people will automatically hate them because they're not the old English D from, you know, the 1900s. And I get that. Tigers have great history and tradition, but I don't know. Let's have some fun with the City Connect.
I know they're doing it for every team, but it's also like nice for a team that has been downtrodden recently and then also is not in like a major market, like getting some of the publicity love. Again, I know they do it for every team. They do it different years, but it's still them being in the news, which I like. And I'll tell you this, for the Rangers ones last year, it was an example of pretty much everybody hated them. And then this is prior to the World Series run. And then by the end of the regular season, you're just kind of like, all right, I get it. They always grow on you is my main point there. Whatever their initial reaction is, most likely they'll grow on people. I guarantee you that's how it works. Especially the teams winning in them. So,
not wrong.
All right. One more kind of silly thing before we dive into some of the player storylines, Cody. I love when you and your fellow beat writers put out videos of, you know, so-and-so throwing a pen, so-and-so in the batting cage or whatever. Because I always have to click on them so I can hear what music's in the background. I don't know why I'm curious about that, but I just am. So, musically, how would you describe the first week of Tigers camp? It seemed like there was a pretty good variety going on.
Yeah, there was, and it's a little different. Like, you're not hearing the cliche songs. Normally at the Lakeland backfields, they'll have music going, coming out of the speakers in the center. And, you know, sometimes it's a pretty good varied playlist, but you get a lot of the, like, typical jock jams or, like, center field. I mean, you get some hype songs too, but you get those. This year, it's been different. Will Vest, of all people, seems to be in charge. He's carrying around one of those huge speakers that is oddly powerful because you can hear it through the whole complex. And I don't know if he's running the playlist, but the music's kind of been a little bit of everything. Some like harder rock, some kind of like softer, like almost beach type music. A little bit of like hip hop, but actually not as much. I posted a video of Jackson Jobe throwing to Evanescence, which I thought was awesome. I got good reviews for Will Vest and the music right now.
You know, one of my memories from playing high school baseball is our head coach throwing BP to Brandy, You're a Fine Girl. Such a weird, he was like loving it too. Brandy, that's awesome, you're fine. That's, he's like throwing BP.
Oh, that makes me want to be on a ball field though. That's awesome.
And when you look, and I didn't realize the lyrics of the song at the time, and then I look back, I was like, it's kind of an interesting song to throw BP to, but I love it. I love it. Great memories.
Our coach would just turn on Rock 108 in Amarillo, Texas. So you had a bunch of teenagers out there, and at the time, like "Sex Is on Fire" was like a popular song. So it was like, principal probably doesn't need to know about this.
Oh man! All right. Well, something that would be music to Tigers fans' ears, Cody, is if Javi Baez could be Javi Baez and not Javier Baez as he currently stands. And we got a version of Best Shape of His Life, and we have the metaphorical passing of the baton with him taking over Miguel Cabrera's old locker. So another guy that showed up very early, and seems to have a good the way I kind of summarize the Javi thing to this point is, this offseason, based on what AJ has said, based on what he has said, I'm not sure if Scott's talked about him much on the record or not, it seems like he did pretty much everything that was asked of him this offseason, and it seems like he took all the necessary steps to have some semblance of a bounce-back year. And when I say that, I'm not talking about 2017, 18, 19 Javi Baez. I mean, just a bounce-back year now that this guy's on the other side of 30. That's all you can really ask for at this point. But we did have, this is one of my favorite things, the Ringer's Brian Curtis, he calls this the Now They Tell Us story. And the Now They Tell Us story in this case was Javi dealing with core and back issues. Not saying they're not legitimate. It's just funny that like a year later we can talk freely about it, because that's just the way that it goes. So your impression of the now richest current player on the Tigers, and someone who is quite literally front and center for this organization as we're on the eve of the first official workout.
Where do you start with Javier, man? I feel like we're more positive regarding Javier than most people on this pod. But I don't know what to make of it. All right. Sometimes the guy's just a mystery. And it's clear he did some things different this offseason. A lot of it's still kind of vague. The back issue, I think, is really interesting. We didn't know about it before, but we still don't know exactly what's wrong with the back. AJ Hinch said, yeah, we were aware of it. Didn't really say a lot of, like, how much did it actually impact his performance? I don't think we know. Is this like back pain with age? Did he have a pulled muscle? Is there something bigger going on? We don't know. But I think clearly Javi took things a little more seriously this offseason. The simple fact he showed up to Lakeland early is encouraging. Does seem like he altered his training regimen to strengthen the core. Maybe that'll help him out a little bit. You know, he parked his Lamborghini in an actual parking space the first day, which I thought was amazing. Second day, though, guy was back on the curb. Yeah, I just laughed when I rolled up. That's Javi for you. If he can hit 20 homers and play good defense, you'll be happy with it. He can still be a 2+ win shortstop if he does that. And I think that's where you need to set expectations. The guy's not going to be an MVP finalist probably ever again. You could still be a lot worse off at shortstop, as we've said multiple times. If he can get a little more out of the guy at the plate, and if he can stay healthy and continue to move well in the field, which he does, guy grades out as a plus defender despite his awful throws, which actually tell you how great his glove work is. But that's kind of where I'm setting the bar for Javi this season.
I think it was AJ who said, you know, he's the number one guy that gets a reaction of, you know, the fan base, you know, media, players, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's so true. And the conundrum.
When I write about Javi, like, the numbers on a Javi Baez story are so much higher than any other Tigers player. I think a lot of it is Chicago-based. Like, it always finds its way on, like, Cubs Twitter, and he's just a hero in Chicago, in addition to, you know, a star in Puerto Rico and really around the world. So despite his performance, man, his brand is still so huge. It's kind of crazy.
Well, he's absolutely the kind of player that could very well be a Detroit folk hero. Like, because we talk about it all the time on this podcast. Like, he kind of is a lunch pail guy. Like, he plays almost every game and plays through injuries a lot. And that's probably, and he has like some flash and some flair that we like as well. Maybe this is just him needing to mature, but did the Tigers feel like they need to save him from himself? Because they talked about maybe he said he might be a little bit more honest if he's hurt, maybe not necessarily injured, but hurt and maybe needs a day. And AJ, you know, talks about like monitoring and all that stuff. And that's like that's every player. That's like a million things. Like, could they do something like that to try to get the best out of him? Like, I'm sure there's got to be some sort of plan to try to get the best out of Javier. And maybe that's like a small piece of it, especially as a guy that's got almost $100 million left on his contract and is only going to get, you know, a game that was never going to age gracefully.
Yeah, I mean, that's the cynical part of this. You got four more years. Feels it's going to be a long time. And the Tigers are not the first people to have tried to save Javier Baez from himself. They're not the first people who have talked to him about making some swing adjustments. They're not the first people who have approached him with different training regimens or ways he can improve his work habits. He probably has implemented some of those things this past offseason more than he ever has in his career. But I think you got to remind yourself that nothing is new. Even Javi still says, I'm still going to be me, you know, and that's the type of player and the type of athlete he is. Like, that's what we're dealing with. You're trying to get a little more out of him. But I think you also have to temper expectations in the process. If you can keep him engaged and keep him having fun, that's really the bigger key than anything. And that's a difficult thing to do. It's probably contingent on the team winning, the ballpark being full. I think those little emotional things will honestly make a bigger difference for Javier Baez than anything else.
Where does he fit in this lineup? Because I see some projections where no one really knows where, like...
I mean, bottom.
Like, bottom where?
Bottom.
Like, 8?
7, 8, 9? 8, probably. I think he started hitting 8 a lot last year. I think that probably makes sense.
And, I mean, that's just wild to think about. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying, like, the notion... Imagine saying that 5 years ago. You know what I mean? 3 years ago. It's crazy. And, you know, in fairness, some of that's a reflection of some progressed and productive hitters that have, like, kind of come through the system. But it's still crazy to think about. Let's go to another player that had the big buzz this week. Jackson Jobe, who will not make the team. I love AJ Hinch quotes, man. He's like, he's not going to make the team. I told him, or I'm going to tell him that, whatever it exactly was, because he's lumping him and Ty Madden together. They're not going to make the team. Focus on, preparation, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, all well and good. It's probably the earliest I've ever told a player. Like, AJ can be gold sometimes, man. But it's probably good that he did say that, because based on like one bullpen session or whatever, if that quote wasn't out there, we'd all be talking about, is there a way that he can make this team? Because there's probably no one who's had better rave reviews so far. I know it's only a weekend, than Jackson Jobe.
It was probably smart of AJ to put out that fire before it could get started, but Jackson Jobe, man, his bullpen was really good. It's just a bullpen. But there are two guys whose bullpens stand out from everyone else. It's Scooble and it's Jackson Jobe. Like the easy velocity, man, just effortless, freaking zipping it in there toward the end. The big breaking ball. Like, I now see what every Tigers scout saw, or not every Tigers scout, what the Tigers scout saw when they drafted him. Like, you watch that, and it's hard to not just think, wow, if we can refine this a little bit, might have something on our hands here. And there have probably been pitchers, you know, who've had such rave reviews for spring bullpens before and then never gone on to do anything. So we should keep that in mind here. But Mr. Jobe's having quite the spring. I'm really excited to see him in a game. If nothing else, he's going to be worth watching this year. I think there's probably still a hurdle or two he's going to have to climb over. But I wouldn't be shocked if he pitches in the major leagues this season.
So, like, we hear that hurdles, this, like, what tangibly, what are they really looking for? Is it just, is it something as simple as consistency? Because, he's got the potential to be a five pitch guy. Like, that's kind of like what we're,
probably four. Fastball, cutter, big slider, changeup, which the changeup's gotten a lot better. He's kind of done away with the curveball. Yeah.
So I'm not disagreeing.
Yeah, I think more consistency with the breaking balls, okay, right? He's kind of tweaked them. They're good, but can they be effective in the strike zone? He got a lot better last year at having different offerings, being less predictable. The cutter helped in that, but that's still a work in progress. You know, he's had a lot more success with the fastball, but how's that going to go? Will the changeup play against righties and lefties at the higher level? Will his velocity be sustained when he starts pitching 140, 150 innings? And also health. The back injury thing is still, I don't know. He seems really healthy right now. Like everybody, he's strengthened it, changed his training regimen to protect against future injury. But I think with every pitcher, you always got to worry about health. So it's a lot of little things, which is good. Like, I think the bigger things he really improved on last year. And now it's those small adjustments to really become a great pitcher.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm just going to wager to say he just probably doesn't have that many professional innings under his belt, which kind of makes...
No, he doesn't.
...makes this, this rise all the more impressive. And between him and Javi and Casey Mize, I'm getting tired of reading about backs, like, with the Tigers. Which that was another storyline from earlier in the week, Cody. Let me ask you like this. You said on this podcast that the first thing you're going to do is you're going to ask Casey Mize, when's the last time you pitched a game healthy? Did you ask that question, and did you get an interesting response?
I asked it. It's actually the second question I asked him because we were on some other topic first. I got the response. That's a tough question, man. So I didn't really get an answer,
but kind of did though.
The answer still perked up my antenna, like, oh, and then kind of got the, like, everyone's always dealing with something type answer. But I got the impression, I mean, I went back and looked. Casey last year said he had been dealing with back issue for, quote, years. So Casey Mize has not pitched fully healthy in, quote, years. We're probably talking Auburn. Maybe his first year in the minors, but he encountered an arm issue, you know, later in that season, which is both in a way concerning, in a way provides some hope, because he probably is the most healthy he has been as a professional right now, which is why I'm so interested to see him pitch. I'm kind of out of the business of scouting spring training bullpens, but I'll tell you, you know, watching his command didn't look great in a bullpen. And command's usually a hard thing for guys in their first year back from Tommy John. Now, because Casey probably could have pitched at the end of last year and didn't, like, he's a little further out than we think of for a guy, you know, first year off Tommy John. But I think that'll be the thing to watch, especially like command of secondary pitches. What is that going to be like for Casey this year? I wouldn't be surprised if he encounters some hiccups there. And Mize has been realistic about that too, which I think is interesting.
Well, yeah, realistic about that, and his, like, what is it, 3.5? Is it 3.5 team option next year? Whatever.
Yeah, 3.1. 3.1, which he was like, yeah, I'm probably not going to hit that, which I got some comments like, oh, so Casey doesn't have, and it's like, no, dude knows the business of the game.
It's very simple. Seems like you could probably get him for cheaper if you're the Tigers in ARB than you would.
And so they tacked on this option basically just to say, oh yeah, we don't negotiate 1 year deals after the deadline to exchange salary figures. So really they gave him a 1 year deal with like a pointless option that he and his agents were just like, I mean, yeah, sure. And Casey knows he's probably not gonna hit it. Like, that's really interesting. I'm glad they didn't sit there and quabble further over the 25K or whatever it was. But also it's like, okay, so what was the point of this option? I don't really know. I get he gets an additional 10K if it's declined, which then puts him to the 840 or whatever. And business of baseball is weird sometimes. But Casey knows it, and he's not kidding himself about it. He's a smart dude.
Yeah.
He really is.
Oh, we've always called him a thinker. I actually just looked to see if he was like an econ major or something in college. He wasn't. But like, yeah, but like he spoke like a kind of a businessman a little bit in that instance. Another example of the rebuild kind of getting into a different stage is you have what was at one time the face of the rebuild kind of talking about the intricacies of the business of arbitration, years later. So, and
how time flies. Yeah,
and he's got a beard now. So, I mean,
that was starting to see, man, this guy's all grown up. My first spring training, he was the attraction. Now he's like, wanting to come back. For both Casey Mize and I, this is 6 spring trainings. I was like, oh, time is passing us by here. I don't like it.
Yeah, it's the years go by really, really quickly. I mean, it's hard to imagine. Like, you talked about the, you know, like, is spring training too long thing, but it did kind of remind me, this is the first normal spring training of the decade. 2020 interruptions, 2021, there's something in 20.
Well, that was
was
that lockdown lock, or that was still COVID? That was still COVID. That we still had COVID protocols. Yeah. 2022 was lockout. Last spring was World Baseball Classic.
So yeah. I don't know. Is that something that a team like this, is that better for a team like this, or does all these little things?
I think for the majority of teams, especially the Tigers, they only had a couple guys in the WBC and they were veteran guys. I think last spring was pretty normal for the Tigers. So I think, you know, not a lot changes here.
Yeah, but it is. But again, to talk about years going by, it is kind of crazy to think about that pretty much every year of the past, however long, there was always something extracurricular or weird or catastrophic going on in the case of 2020. But, you know, you talked about Mize being like the showcase of spring training, and now it's Job or whatever. But can you go back and think, like, would your intrigue go up for the potential, is higher for the potential of Job right now as it was Mize back then? Or is it like about the same? Because again, different career arcs, college yeah. versus prep, but there is a 1 versus a 3 overall pick. So it's like, you know, kind of similar.
I think Mize was the bigger story because there was nothing else positive going on for the Tigers. It was going to be a really bad team in 2019, and anyone with a brain knew it. And the storyline was the rebuild. We got the number one overall pick. It's Casey Mize. He was the storyline. This year, I think Job has a higher ceiling as a pitcher, but there are a lot of other things to talk about. So although Job is a big attraction, he's not the main attraction.
I mean, that's a sign of organizational growth right there. And have you gotten a chance to talk to Riley Green yet? Has he spoken?
He spoke with some reporters the day before I got down here, so I've kind of said hi to Riley, but have not sat down and had a conversation with him. Figure I'll wait until I have something new to ask him about that he hasn't already heard before I'll do that one. But he's here. He's looking right? Good. He's healthy. He's taking cuts. Yeah, all things are well with Riley Green.
Good. Because that's a, I don't know, just the weirdness of an off. Hand Tommy John, like it's like you don't really know, like, you know, what to expect, but, you know, based on some of the social media and photos and all that stuff, seems like a guy that's, you know, in good spirits and all that stuff. And yeah, we probably don't say it enough, a lot riding on Riley Green,
a lot even to be healthy. We got some bromance stories though.
Okay.
He was kind enough to pick Tork up at the Orlando airport at 5:30 a.m. Tork got in the car and they drove straight to Lakeland, got to work, and then they're staying at an Airbnb, and I don't know exactly what happened. Riley lost the key or something. They got locked out of their Airbnb, so still two guys in their early 20s just, just going through some shenanigans on some level, which I appreciate.
I envy is what I do. I envy just being that young and the world in front of you and – Yeah,
but damn near all these guys are freaking engaged now. So the two guys getting some teasing for not being engaged, Riley Green and Jason Foley. Alex Lane called Jason Foley single boy. And Riley said, guess who's not getting engaged in the next 5 years, and raised his hand. It's kind of like, you're probably a wise man, Mr. Green.
All right. I respect the honesty. I'll tell you what, this was not submitted. Now we're just kind of playing pepper with topics, which I don't mind. I got a lot on my mind. I would submit Andrew Chafin as maybe best shape of his life guy. No one's really talking about it, but I saw that video of him with his remote control truck, and I was like, Andrew looked like he shed some weight now. He looks good.
I've already had a little bit of Chafin and Foley banter, which I love, and he... In Andrew Chafin terms, he does appear to be slimmer and in better shape. He's still Andrew Chafin, but he took things a little bit more seriously through, I think, bullpens instead of long toss, and actually kind of did some workouts, which I don't think he had ever really done before. So right now, he is the early best shape of his life award. You're right. It's Andrew Chafin of all people.
I mean...
The odds on that would have been a great bet.
We should have maybe anticipated some version of that, because he said that he was actually like going to like what, his alma mater or whatever to do some some training or whatever. But I mean,
Kent State,
who could have anticipated that? Well, let's transition to some of the moves that the Tigers made over the past couple of days. You mentioned Keston Hira, right? Hira. And they acquired Blake Dickerson for some bonus pool, international bonus pool money. One, a move that we could see some impact with this season. Another one that will be years away. But just another example, if you ever think Scott's sleeping. No.
Scott, I told Scott, I was like, man. Well, Keith thing, I was on my last day of vacation. We were in the car, and he's kind of like, yeah, I know, I'm sorry. I knew I was not going to be a popular figure among the writers that day. And he pointed out, he's like, man, I don't get vacation. All right, he gets paid the big bucks, but it's being a baseball executive, man, even compared to other sports, is probably the most full calendar. I do not envy that for a second. He's busy early in spring training getting a 19-year-old 6'6" pitcher in exchange for international bonus money. I don't even know what the story is there. And honestly, we're going to talk about that. You know, if this kid makes it, we'll talk about him in 2 years.
Yeah.
For now, let's talk about Keston Hira.
I was about to say,
maybe,
you like this move.
Maybe. I don't dislike it. I don't like it. I think it's a sensible move. You get him on a minor league deal. You basically get a free look at a guy who has hit 20 homers in the big leagues before, or 19 as a rookie. Interesting career arc, big time, like top 10 prospect. Big dude, outgrew second base, now plays first base, and the bat went cold. You could argue he's a cautionary tale. You could argue he's why someone like Colt Keith was wise to take the money when it was there in front of him. You could argue, you hope the likes of Jace Young don't become Keston Hira. I think that's why I have a hard time seeing him making the roster. He can pretty much just play first base. He's too big for second base. He's been terrible at it. He's played a little bit of outfield. I don't know exactly how he reviews there. Probably not great. He hasn't done a lot in the big leagues. He has a right-handed bat. Maybe he could DH a little bit. He spent all last year in AAA. He raked in AAA. It seems like everyone rakes in AAA. Strikes out at a crazy clip, more than 40% in 2022. So that's really concerning. Does not seem sustainable. And at the same time, it's like, oh, he had a 113 OPS plus. He was better at the plate than Spencer Torkelson was last year. So where it's like, Keston Hira's career is over, but Spencer Torkelson's on the rise. But actually, last time we saw this guy in the majors, in some ways, he was really bad, but you boil it down to one metric, and he was productive offensively. If he is offensive depth, if you're able to stash him and keep him in AAA as like a backup first baseman, I think you can feel good about it. Maybe he shows you he's unlocked something. Again, you don't have to pay him real money unless he makes the big league roster. Seems wise to bring a guy like this into camp. We can talk about him being in the mix. I don't think he has enough of like position, definitely not multiple positions to really fit on the Tigers roster pending injuries.
Yeah, I mean, what's the loss here on taking a move like that? And especially someone who's, you know, had some ups and downs in the major leagues, like that's valuable if you're going to kind of put something like that out there. So let's wrap up with this, Cody. So we talked a lot of kind of big picture stuff earlier in the pod, and it's typical like opening of spring training. And one of the things that I had said over the past couple years is that like in order for kind of rebuilds to shoot up, you kind of need the unexpected rises. And that to this point is Cary Carpenter. There's another one of those in the system right now. You wrote about it in The Athletic, and that's Justice Bigby. And a guy that I would describe his story as I understand it, kind of a miracle. Like he's a guy right now who projects to eventually make the big leagues, and as a 19th round pick, like that's far from expected. And I don't know what the odds are, but I'm sure they're low. But as it turns out, there's way more miracles in his life than just 19th round to potentially making a major league team.
Yeah, it's one of those great stories, and spring training is the best time of year to learn about and tell and appreciate these stories. Justice Bigby, number one, I mean, he's like Cary Carpenter 2.0. Such a similar trajectory, similar story, similar rise, and a guy that it was easy to look at last year, and you'd see some highlights on Twitter, and you'd be like, okay, he's doing well in AA, like, whatever. And then you look, and he hit like 340 over the course of the year, and he was too good for the Eastern League, and a small taste of AAA. He did okay. He went to the Arizona Fall League. He did pretty good. Scott Harris talking about him was like, we talked about that level-headed, like, realism. There's no hedging talking about Justice Bigby. Scott Harris is excited about him. He's like, he breaks. We're so proud of him. There are a couple things we think he can do better. But he's put himself on the big league radar. And that tells me that, like, this is real. There, he's going to probably start the year in Toledo. And if a couple dominoes fall, he might make his big league debut. I don't know if he'll have the success in the big leagues Cary Carpenter has, but I think we've learned enough about Justice Bigby now to realize it would be foolish to write him off. He's a young hitter worth paying some attention to. And you learn more about him, man. He's got the great story, really better than his story is his mother's. Survived cancer on three different occasions, which is, you know, I talked to her, and it's a tough interview because how do you even – you try to put yourself in the other person's shoes, and I just can't do that with someone who's gone through it, not once, but twice, but three times. Starting when she was 16, doctors initially didn't think she was going to live. She had a rare bone cancer. She beat that. Comes a mom, gets her 30s, gets breast cancer, beats it. You think you're all in the clear, Justice Bigby's in college, and cancer comes back. She's diagnosed for a third time. Some of this is going on in the height of the pandemic. She has to go to Houston for treatment. Justice is off playing ball. She's alone. She had to pay for the travel and the treatment. And I cannot imagine the hardships the family went through. Obviously, his mom, Sarah. I don't think anyone can fully know what that's like. And then Justice is trying to focus on his career. He started as a walk-on at a small school, Western Carolina. And by the end, he's conference player of the year, has himself on draft radars. Kind of gets gypped in the 2020 draft, doesn't get selected, goes in the 19th round the next year. He's an older prospect. And now here he is. He's one of the most interesting guys at Tiger spring training. So definitely a story worth rooting for in Justice Bigby.
Yeah. And again, like one of those, I'm not putting any expectations on him or whatever, but the Cary Carpenters of the world, potentially the Justice Bigbys of the world, those are, we always focus on first round picks, maybe even second round picks and free agent signings and all that stuff. But every champion has those kind of guys that, you know, either came out of nowhere or got a second chance, or, you know, like Scooble to a certain extent is an example of this. So, yeah, really, really cool story. And you come away from it like admiring him and especially his mother, because again, like I, far be it for me to think about A, going through cancer, B, like with, you know, three children and, you know, all this stuff. Like, no, I couldn't even imagine. So hopefully we get to see her on the Bally monitor watching Justice, you know, make his major league debut and all that stuff. I'm sure that'll be an amazing moment. But that's, again, one of the reasons that we love this sport, is that, like, guys like Justice, like Carey, can seemingly come out of nowhere and fulfill, like, a lifelong dream. You don't get that in every walk of life. So I hope everybody takes the time to read that on The Athletic and all of Cody's work throughout spring training, which I feel like we bounced around a lot today, Cody, but that's okay. It's first spring training, there's a lot of... A lot to talk about, kind of a lot of theoretical stuff, and now the work really begins. So is there anything else you wanted to get into before we get out of here?
Oh, gosh. I feel like we probably didn't even cover everything, but one of the things about baseball and spring training, next week we're probably going to have a whole different set of topics. And someone could come up injured, someone else could join the organization, someone's going to crush in live BPs, it's a lot of speculation that probably ultimately is not going to matter come opening day, but it's a fun time of year. It's my favorite time of year. So thanks to everyone for following along.
Yeah. Well, thank you for following on X at Cody Stavenhagen. I'm at Kieran _Steckley, pod page at Turn Corner Pod, YouTube, Turning the Corner Podcast, Apple, Spotify, 5-star review if you feel so inclined. So for Cody Stavenhagen, I'm Kieran Steckley. Everybody have a great day.